podcast. And today has been is a crazy day today. Not only am I going to be working on this podcast and interviewing the producer and director of the movie Biker Fox, and I think we already have them in here. Hold on a second.
Hey,
is this Jeremy and Todd?
Hey. Oh, it's just Jeremy.
Oh, just Jeremy? Okay. Clint had told me maybe both of you guys would be coming on.
Oh, okay.
All right, no big deal. So, I saw your movie Biker Fox. Mockumentary,
yes.
I guess we could say.
Documentary. He's a real guy. It's all real.
He's a real guy. He really rides around in the streets of Tulsa.
Oh yeah. Super famous guy here, celebrity in town, and around the world through his website bikerfox.com. But completely authentic. That's really the guy.
Wow. Yeah, when I first saw it, it looked almost like a Tim and Eric type of show,
right,
I guess
right.
You could say, and then becoming a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, have you ever heard of John Kilduff, the Let's Paint TV guy? He's a public access kind of guru. All right. Yeah, I had spoken to him just a couple of days ago, and I guess he's the opposite. It's an actual act. It's not like the real guy. What he does is he runs around on a treadmill and paints. And then he does other stuff like plays chess, and he's a total nut. And he used to do public access for years, and now he does a web show. But he definitely has an Andy Kaufman kind of idea around his work. But
yeah, well,
Frank, AKA Biker Fox, is the real guy.
yeah, that's what was interesting is that he does play this character Biker Fox, which in the year 2000 he was having health problems and was really overweight, so he decided to lose the weight. And how he did that was to start riding a bicycle, and he lost over 100 pounds. And he felt so good, he decided to make this character up, and this character Biker Fox. And since then, he's blurred the lines between Frank and Biker Fox, and now he's legally changed his name to Biker Fox. He is Biker Fox, and part of the problem was that even though he is that guy, he tries to perform and tries to entertain and tries to inspire whenever there's a camera on. But I really wanted to get beyond the Biker Fox character and get to the character that he actually is. So that was a big challenge with the film is figuring out techniques and ways to get a genuine performance out of him. Struggling with that, we just decided to set up cameras all over his house on tripods and give him, so any room in his house, there'd be a camera ready set up, give him remote controls. He could just turn them on whenever he wanted. And, or we would go over and turn the cameras on, and because he's severely ADHD, you would forget the cameras were even rolling. And that's when we started to really get down to the guy he actually is. So we used his ADD against him and tricked him into really getting more comfortable in front of the camera and not feeling the need to perform all the time. Because that was so much more interesting than the actual character he'd made.
Yeah, it's, how do you direct something like that? The way it was shot, it seems very off the cuff. It doesn't seem as though like you would be standing there and say, okay, do this. It's almost like you have to wait for that moment. Was there a lot of scripting in this movie?
No scripting at all. I kind of compare it to shooting a nature film. You kind of have to have your camera ready and hide in the bushes and wait for something good to happen and just hope that you're rolling when something good does happen, because a lot of it, there'd be times when we'd miss, this spontaneous something that happened that you'd just be like, oh, my God. There's just so much just magic swirling around this guy, and everything from his connection with animals to his business and his, his motivational speaking. It was all just heightened reality, and just couldn't believe it. So, yeah, we definitely had to shoot it non-traditionally, and you know, it really gave shape to the film and made it, you know, because this character was so unique, it really allowed us to try to make, you know, a documentary, but it's almost like a cross genre. It's part performance, it's part comedy, but it's all under the documentary genre.
Right. Now, talking about animals.
I can't believe. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, please do. You can't believe that he's Micro Fox,
that's
Frank.
That's a real guy, yeah, that it's authentic. And, you know, a lot of people think that it's scripted, and I, what I tell people is I can't make this stuff up, you know. He's one of a kind character, and, you know, that's what drew me to him and making the movie.
Right. How did you get a hold of him? Did you just see him in the street and said, you know what, I need to tell your story? Or did he come to you guys?
No, that's exactly how it happened. I live in a totally opposite part of town than him, so I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know his website. And I was out in the south side of Tulsa, in the very south edge of Tulsa, and I was in traffic, and I noticed this guy just weaving through the cars, and we were stopped at an intersection at a red light, and down on his bicycle staring at people in traffic while they were parked, shaking his ass at them in this tight spandex. And I thought, man, that's weird. Like, his, you know, he had these kind of like arty-farty glasses on, and it, nothing about him made sense. He had this long, curly hair and bald on the top, and he just seemed like a brat. And so I was pulling over into a Taco Bueno parking lot next to this old bowling alley, and he pulls up next to my car and growls at me. So I roll out my window, and I'm like, so what's up, man? And the first thing he ever said to me is, are you married?
Whoa. All right.
So I told him I was, and I wasn't at the time. But we got to talking, and he told me about his story and who he was. And so I invited him to perform at Tulsa Overground, which is a film festival that I've been doing since 1998 with my producer, Todd Lincoln. And we usually have some kind of entertainment to kick off the festival each night and read our disclaimer. So he came out and did some bike tricks, did his front flip, his patented front flip over the handlebars and land on his feet and scream and tell people to live life and love one another and you know, eat baked fish and play wiffle ball and you know, slam dunk 8-foot basketball goals. And so, yeah, I was just really drawn to the character. And then, you know, that night we got to talking, and he told me that he is also, you know, a filmmaker, you know, it's more of a hobby, but he, you know, shoots video around his house and mostly of nature video. And so that got me really interested because I live on a 500-acre ranch here in Tulsa, and I live in the middle of the woods, and I like to, you know, do video experiments, similar to kind of what he was doing. But anyway, he invited me over, and he's like, oh, I want you to borrow some of this tape and, you know, tell me what you think. And I was expecting, like, you know, maybe a couple of tapes, but he hands me a box full of tape, probably over 300 mini DV and high videotapes of all this stuff he's got. And it would be literally like 100 hours of him hand-feeding raccoons on his back porch. And all the footage I was just so jealous of. Because he was more of an amateur filmmaker, he was not really looking through the lens when he set up the camera. So it gave the camera, the cinematography, like the camera angles, like this fresh, cool, shoot from the hip kind of feel. And it had all these old video formats, like Hi8 and Mini DV, and it just looked so cool and nostalgic. And that's why I was like, wow, I need to keep shooting with this guy. And we really just started doing it for fun. And then it wasn't until he started getting arrested that it really just, you know, we realized it could become a documentary.
Right. Well, I guess the story, like, as if you were one of the hecklers that almost tried to run him over, probably would have been a little bit better. But I guess if he's just rolling up to your car, you know, asking if you're married, that's as good as anything.
Right.
Now,
right.
With shooting and the raccoons in general, was that footage his own, or did you guys shoot that?
Well, you can tell with a certain – it's a mix. You know, when you see somebody holding a camera and actually moving it with him, I think the first raccoon scene raccoon feeding scene that you see, I shot. But then there are times where, you know, I couldn't be there every single night, and he feeds them 100 pounds of dog food every night, up to 50 raccoons. And, so I would just like be like, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep, you know, I'll bring over tape. You just keep shooting every night. And when you run out of tape and they're still eating, you know, pop in another tape. And I would go over every couple of days and pick up, you know, 20 tapes at a time. I mean, you shoot like 20 tapes in 2 days. And yeah, we literally went through it all, which is more Biker Fox footage than anybody should watch. But yeah, it's certainly it's a mix of my footage and his.
Did you have to wear any sort of protection when you were dealing with the raccoons? Because that's what I was asking. I was wondering if maybe he was just shooting it and giving it to you guys because nobody wanted to get near a bunch of raccoons that he was feeding.
No protection. I make sure to always wear pants because I don't want to scratch my leg. But
shots?
Yeah. I mean, it worked out. I mean, you know, it's certainly scary, but you do it enough. And I mean, I shot with them for hours doing that. So you kind of get used to it, but you got to kind of be aware of your surroundings at all times because there would be moments where I'm getting really caught up in him feeding a raccoon and really trying to get a, you know, a good shot. And the next thing I know, these tiny raccoon hands are like touching the small of my back or like grabbing my shoelaces you've always kind of just got to be ready because they're just swarming and they're all angry and hungry and they want to eat and, you know, it's quite an experience.
And then you got Biker Fox behind you too. You got to be aware of him.
Right, yeah. The first time I
who
went
knows what he'll be doing.
I didn't know if he was going to hack me up or, and you know, bury me in his basement or you know, what he was. He's such a raw guy, you know, raw dog. He's
right.
You really don't know what to expect. It's kind of anything goes hanging out with him. And, I mean, he really is that way. He's got severe, as I mentioned earlier, severe ADHD, and he always talks about his head spinning all day long. And so it's just kind of like just ideas and thoughts and, you know, things are swirling around him all the time. And he's always moving around. And again, that really helped give the movie shape because it was like, well, this guy can't sit still for more than a few moments. Like, the movie's not going to sit still. We're not going to have anybody sitting in chairs doing interviews talking about old Biker Fox, you know, back in the day, or, you know, we wanted the movie to be constantly fluid and action happening, and to him, you know, and then to really tap into his psyche, you know, to make this film as much, you know, of an, you know, the most pure experience, Biker Fox experience you can get. So we had him narrate the film, we had him shoot a lot of the film, he's in almost every single shot of the movie, and his voiceover is really structured in a way that was trying to match his psyche, like how his thought process works, and you know, to just, you know, if you know, to just give the viewer the truest portrait of this man. And I think we did that.
Oh yeah, it almost too true. It felt surreal that it was so true.
Yeah. And that's how it feels with hanging out with him. I mean, I went over to his house last week to catch up, and it was, I mean, it's just picked her up right where we left off. It was just the same, you know, muscle car parts, screaming, animals, you know, wild turkeys, raccoons, rabbits. I mean, it's almost like a Disney film. It's like Snow White or something, or just like walking around screaming at people on the telephone, and wild turkeys are just roaming his yard, and you know, I was over there right at sunset, and I was kind of standing next to his woods, talking on the telephone, and here's like this line of raccoons starting to make their way in, And it's weird because the raccoons and the turkeys are very territorial, and like they all each have kind of their part of the yard. And when they kind of clash, it's like Crips and Bloods or something. Like they all have. And you know, so it's just always that way. It's nuts.
Now with the whole weight loss thing, one of the things that I picked up on, you know, I look at movies, I dissect them to the maximum. At the beginning, we got him cooking a whole bunch of meat and then saying, all this is bad for you, pretty much. Then, yeah. Like, three quarters through the film, I see him walking around with a half gallon of ice cream.
Right.
What's going on with that? Does he know what he's doing, or does he just not care?
No, he knows what he's doing. That's just one of his demons, you know. You know, Biker Fox is
a big fan of ice cream.
Yeah, he's the light, and he wants to spread light and love, but he's also the dark. And I think that, you know, that's one of his issues, is that he became, because of his lifestyle, he became, you know, overweight, and something he struggles with on a daily basis. I know that, you know,
right.
he'll go a couple of days with just one meal at night just to kind of keep his weight down. And, you know, I think at times he doesn't know that you should really try to eat small meals throughout the day, and drink some water. Like, it's one thing, you never drink water. Like, man, you can't survive without water. Like, your body needs the water to do all this, to flush out everything. But yeah, there's another cue where he and Daniel were at the salvage yard, and one of them got in like Arby's or something, and he snuck a piece of like fried fish. He like stole it from one of his employees. He's just narking it, just like smacking his lips, and he's like, oh, fish is so good, fried fish is so good. And it's just like, you know, he gave into that impulse at the moment. But yeah, I mean, it's a constant struggle for him. And, you know, his life's work. He's like Jack, you know, I compare him to Jack LaLanne a lot. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He was the original fitness guru. Started back in like the 50s. He had his own TV show. He would do one arm push-ups, and he was the first guy to really educate people on the benefits of healthy diet and exercise. And he was a motivational speaker. And I think Biker, you know, at some point in his life, that kind of trickled into his subconscious. And Jack LaLanne is like the godfather of the fitness movement. And I think that Biker Fox is sort of the dark uncle.
Right.
And that he's sort of like this, like Jack LaLanne on cough syrup and Ritalin or something.
Or an underground Richard Simmons.
Yeah, like punk rock Richard Simmons. But I mean, you know, he is that, but he's so much more than that. Because, I mean, that was what was so great about him, the character, and the challenge of making this movie is like, once you figure out, like, here's the movie. Well, then you could make a movie just about his business, his muscle car parts business. And then you could make a movie just about his nature conservation and love of nature and his nature filmmaking. And so there's just so much to this character, so many layers. You know, it really gave us the opportunity to try to make something, you know, like I said, some kind of cross-genre or some kind of hybrid film. You know, we're trying to make something original, and it was all allowed because of his character.
Right. Now, what's the next step for Biker Fox? Because from, you know, like you're telling me how it's like, you know, it's pretty much split up into three different sections of his life, all grouped together. It's almost as if it's like promoting itself to say, well, maybe this could be a reality television show. What's the end game for this movie?
Well, that's something people have, you know, talked to us about. And something, you know, I've got to decide if how I would be involved with something like that. But, I mean, you know, Biker Fox is going to continue doing what he does. I mean, he's unaffected by it.
Right, because that's
you know,
it. He's just going to keep on doing it without a camera or with the camera.
Right, he's going to do it no matter what. And, you know, I think he would love to be a full-time entertainer. That's something he would love to do. I don't think it's going to change him much, and he's just going to keep doing you know, keep selling muscle car parts, keep feeding raccoons, and you know, just keep being himself, I guess. But yeah, I know
right.
he does have a cartoon or like an animation project in the works with an animator named James Farr, and there have been talk of reality, but the thing about reality shows is that it's so, I don't know, they're all so conservative and scripted, and what makes his character work is the serendipity and the spontaneity, and, you know, it would have to be the craziest reality show you've ever seen to for it to work, and so you'd have to find the right production company to match that, I think.
Right. All right. Well, I think we've gotten quite a bit on BikerBox. What's next for you? Are you in the process of any other projects?
Yeah, I'm producing a documentary called Dreamland and writing a narrative script, and then also Tulsa Overground, the film festival that I co-founded and co-directed with my partner Todd. I mentioned earlier, it's coming back at this August after a 7-year hiatus. So, going back to film festival directing for another year.
Nice. Is BikerBox going to be the featured film of the festival?
Oh, we talked about it.
Are you guys
going to?
If you guys are running it, you probably, at least you can get it in there.
Oh, yeah. That's an easy call, but... Yeah, I think the people who are here really in Tulsa really, you know, it's screened a couple times and it's always been just packed out, the door, people trying to get in. So, you know, I think there's definitely a demand for that. So it'll probably happen.
Good. Maybe he'll get a surprise appearance from himself.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody that's like actually yelled at him on the street will probably show up too, right?
I know. I keep waiting for that. Like, we'll go out to dinner or something, and I keep waiting for someone to just, like, walk up to him and punch him in the face. And, you know, just
hasn't happened yet, though.
But, hasn't happened yet. I'm so surprised.
Yeah, it's not like he can, you know, fade off into a whole bunch of other people that do the same thing. I mean, he's probably the guy that rides around on his bike doing the dance with that hairdo.
Right. He is the guy, and... But with that said, there are imitators now here in town, a few of them that, like, kind of following his lead, but, you know, no one can match it.
Right. You just start a little gang, a little biker gang, biker foxes.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
All right, well, we have to wrap up. But thanks a lot for getting on and talking to me about BikerBox and setting me straight on the truth behind it.
Oh, yeah.
It was
well,
definitely
so
an
in- And if I can we mention BikerFoxTheMovie.com and BikerBox Movie on Facebook and BikerBox Movie on Twitter and BikerBox Movie on Instagram? And then
you guys
also,
are all over the place.
We are. And then there's BikerFox.com, which right now redirects you to the movie website, but it's actually BikerFox.com. It's BikerFox's sort of passion project. It's his sort of his world that he's made up that, you know, once the film release goes on a little bit, then we'll set it back to his website. But it's some crazy stuff. Go check it out. I mean, he's big in, like, Sweden because of it. People all over the world know this guy because of his website and his story and his glamour shot. He took, you know, right after he lost all the weight, he took all these glamour shots. And, you know, so they're all awesome.
Yeah, I saw those.
Yeah, they're
actually, amazing. I went to the website, I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, and I saw, you know, he had, like, you know, animated segments. But then, like, last week, now it's all just the movie. So
right.
I don't know what's going on over there. Is there a secret link to get back to his original site?
I think you can go to skullet.com. I think he owns like 50 different domain names, so that if somebody blocks him, he's always got another thing to, like, flash up. So.
Right.
Yeah, he needs to work on some. He's got some really some bad music on the front page. But there's actually a link on there that says if you want, you can go to my old site. That's the one you need to check out, his old site. And there's a link to it on the front page. Once we started making the movie, you know, he started hiring this animator, and they started to work on this cartoon. So he started to get stuff with that and started promoting that. And then he was on Ridiculousness, the Rob Dyrdek show. And so he really started to kind of try to promote this, like, superhero cyclist, outsider cyclist character. And, it really kind of watered down how amazing his original site was. But if you can find the Easter egg in there, to his old site, that's what you got to check out.
All right, I'll have to search around again and find the actual part of the grid so I can click it again and tell everybody about it.
Right. Good luck.
All right, Jeremy. Well,
good luck,
thanks again for having me on, and good luck with the rest of Vikerpox.
All right, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the help.
Oh, it was awesome, man.
All right.
All right. Be well.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Well, there you have it. I'm surprised. Vikerpox, totally authentic. My God, there are people out there like that. But you know what? That makes the movie even more interesting to know that there is a guy out there riding his bike. Riding his bike with traffic with an AC/DC biker shirt on and a helmet and a horrible comb over, screaming at motorists and feeding raccoons. This isn't reality television, folks. This is the world. And we have 2 minutes left, but we're just going to wrap it up right now. So without further ado, thank you once again for listening to the Critics Den podcast. And we will see you next week when to somebody. We may even talk about me playing South Park The Stick of Truth for a whole night. Yes, I'm late to the party. I'm Patrick Emmel, and I'm not wearing any pants. Goodbye.